Accession number 2004, Mr. Len Selleck, Reel 3. Now, what about your call-up then? So you're working for the printer's gold block.
Yeah.
What was the call-up procedure? From when did you first hear about it, you know, that you were going to be called? You must have known it was
called. I knew I was going to be called up, and it was just a question of time. It was some time after. I was called up to report to Oswestry on the 25th of March, 1955.
There's a sort of... Before that, what was the process of it? You know, I mean, the medical...
The medical... I took my medical at the building, which is now part of the British Museum, along with many other leads. I passed A1, which I found strange because I wore glasses, but I was A1 in the army. The medical was... No, the medical was just a bit embarrassing down there, you know. Probably the first time I've ever been naked in front of another human being. So I did not enjoy that.
And was it a proper medical?
Oh, yeah. It's very thorough as far as the knowledge of the day. There were no such thing as x-rays and things, but you must have seen about, up to 10 different doctors, specialists in feet and arms and looking in your ears and...
What about intelligence tests or general, you know, tests?
I can't remember doing that at all. There was a colourblind test, of course, but intelligence test, I can't say there was. I think they would have gone mainly on my quali. They would have asked me what my qualifications were, and they were pretty low, as I've already explained. But no particular test.
Now, were you given the choice of service at all?
Yes. Now, I am the last brother to go in. I had three other brothers who've been in the services ahead of me because they were all older than me. And so I knew quite a bit about the procedure. I did actually choose to go in the Royal Artillery, which was granted. And I did that on the basis because somebody told me that the largest regiment in the British Army at that time, probably still is, was the Royal Artillery. And I had this naive idea I could get lost in a crowd.
That was it then.
That was it. There was no other reason for the artillery. My father was an ex-service. All the male in the family were ex-service. My father was in the Border Regiment, one brother in the RAF, one brother in the Royal Corps of Signals, and one brother in the Royal Ulster Rifles. So I chose that I would rather ride in a truck than do what Brother Ted did.
So what was the call? It was on 25th of March.
25th of March.
Where was you
going to? I was to go to Oswestry and report to the barracks in Oswestry, which is no longer there.
Do you know its name? Or?
No, I can't remember. I was only there for 2 weeks. It's really, it turns out, that it was a kitting out regiment more than anything. They marched you about for 2 weeks and then decided what you might or might not be good at.
What do you remember of that? You know when you join the army, you're a civilian.
Yeah.
And what happened when you got to the gate? And also, actually, the journey there must have been quite an adventure.
Yeah. We had the first the train ride up with various other lads. I was in a compartment with a friend of mine, Roy, and Roy is one of my friends still to this day.
You know,
Roy Jemmett. Yeah.
Roy Jemmett.
Yeah. Also a port and down man. I travelled up with him. We served together in that. The first thing, the main thing I remember was rolling up your left trouser leg. It was your first taste of discipline, but that might have just been this particular sergeant. So there you were, off the train, in civilian clothes, rolling up your left trouser leg. Strange.
And why?
Well, he said it was the first taste of discipline. Now you'll be doing what you're told. See the point. I had the expression, you know, if I say shit, you jump on the shovel, and that's what they intended to prove. So they'd make us look ridiculous at the first move into military service.
So he does that as soon as you get to
Oswestry? As soon as we got to Oswestry, there was trucks waiting for us to take us from the station. And we all got in there, in my batch anyway. And then, of course, it was issuing kit, marching and...
Now, what about the kit? What were you given? Do you remember?
Oh, quite a lot. Yeah, that took quite a day.
And how did they do it?
You went along a line on a bench. It was slapped down in front of you. A uniform, oh, your size, so-and-so. And then it was very roughly and quickly done. What size boots do you take? And Most of it had to be exchanged eventually because the tunic didn't fit. Everything, down to a tin helmet, you were issued with.
So they guessed your size?
They guessed your size. The guy across the counter just said, you're a 42 chest. There's no measuring or anything.
42 small, 42 medium.
That's right. It was just a guess. These uniforms, the main uniform, would later be tailored anyway.
And what did you get? Do you remember what they actually gave you?
You got two BDs, that's
battle dress.
Two, you had a best BD and a standard BD. You had a suit of denim, which is what they camouflage things now, but they weren't camouflaged then, they were just khaki. You had a housewife, which tickled me, I'd never heard of that one before. I thought that's good. Tin helmet, drawers cellular, that's, I always remember them, vests. Three shirts, I believe. Socks that wore out very quickly. About four pairs of those. Mess tins, belt, gaiters. We spent the first night. ID discs, which I've still got. It's the only thing I've got. And we spent the first night putting on numbers on all the equipment. I've been writing it on in. Indelible ink, as they called it in those days, or stamping it with a metal punch. So that was the uniform. There must have been more to the uniform than that. There was a scarf. Oh, it was known as a cap comforter, not a scarf. Cap comforter.
So you got all this?
Shaving brush, shaving kit. Yeah.
And what was your accommodation like? It was your first experience of was it
huts? It was, they called them spiders because there was a central point and four central hub and four sheds. Yeah, yeah, came out from each side. Yeah, yeah.
And what was your room like? How many in there? Who was there?
Couldn't draw a picture.
Roughly.
About 20 men, I should think.
Would there be an
10 down each side, yeah.
NCO at the end?
The NCO had his own room at the end. He was a corporal.
And what sort of bed space? What did you have for your area of that room?
You had a locker by the side of your bed. You had a shelf above your bed for books, allegedly, but it wasn't really. It was to put your big pack tin helmet on during the night. No, that's it. Steel locker.
Now, so that's the sort of hut you were in. What were you doing in that 2 weeks? We'll come to the training when you get, because you do your proper training at Real. What were you doing in the 2 weeks at Oxford Street?
No, we were actually doing training. We were marching. We'd be put on parade and marching about. The first few days of that, anyway, was kit and then kit inspection after kit inspection and told so what you was expected. Well, it entailed Blanco. They showed you how to do it, and then you had to go and do it.
People don't know what Blanco is anymore.
Blanco is a sort of chalk that you wet, and you scrubbed your belt with it, and it came up nice and clean and khaki. It was like shoe white today. None of this would be used today, because trainers, you don't white. But when I was younger, you even did your own PE kit. Whitening. So Blanco is I think some sort of chalk, really, coloured chalk. Different colours for different jobs.
So you Blanco, what had to be Blancoed?
Blancoed, so you dipped your brush in water and then into the a round cake of this Blanco, which is what it was called, and then scrubbed the belt with it, and the chalk dried, and that was the finish you were supposed to get.
That's Blanco. What else?
Brass cleaning, get rid of the lumps and bumps. It had to be like a mirror, but it never was, not with me. And boots.
With the brass, were they still using the button sticks and things like that?
Button sticks, yeah. No, we had button sticks. Except the greatcoat. The greatcoat, the Stay-Bright button, as they called it, had just come out. And you didn't have to do the greatcoat buttons. But your buckles and everything else, it's not just the belt, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 brass pieces to be cleaned on an army belt all together. And then there was the kit bags and the ammunition pouches, all contained much more. There was a lot of brass to be cleaned. The main thing that sort of seemed to be paranoid about was boots. They did like shiny boots. And they were brand new boots, and they were pimply leather, heel end, toe, and you had to remove those first. Everybody had their own system. I followed them. You'd light a candle, you'd take the spoon, and you would try and smooth the bumps out and then polish them. I never mastered them. I know people who did.
We'll come to that.
Yeah.
How would you polish them after you got the pimples out? What was the method they were using?
That was quite simple. That was take a cloth on your finger, circular movements, spit and polish. This must be where the expression came from, because you'd put the polish on first, then spit on top of the polish, and you would just do layer after layer until they really did shine.
And how did you take to this?
I didn't enjoy it at all. I thought it was a great waste of time. You had to do it. You didn't really have a lot of choice. You were going to go there. But there would always be some better than you, and they would always criticise anyway. Whatever you did, it would be criticised.
So what was the actual inspect? How would you lay your kit out? Did they have
there was a set pattern to lay the kit out. That was always had to be done. And again, that was never right. I think it's deliberate. I think it was a psychology that you don't do well for those first. Nobody in the army would ever come up and say, that's well done. That didn't happen. I think the army had been using psychology long before the word psychology was invented. They really knew what they were doing.
What were, in your opinion, what were they doing?
They were breaking you to make you. I think that puts it in simple terms. They were going to be in charge. I'm not against this. I can see the reasons for it. Very much so, discipline and everything else. But they never gave praise. That wasn't part of the thing. I see now in sort of education and school kids, you have to praise them. We were never praised, no matter how smart you were.
What would an inspection be like? So you've done it, you've laid it all out. What would happen was it an officer or an NCO?
Your NCO would have a look first and spot it. We didn't really go much in for destroying it. He would criticise it. That's not up to standard. They would always look at the bed where everything was laid out regimentally and measured and so on. They would always be able to find something wrong. Always. Slightly annoyed, and they would embarrass you.
But they wouldn't tip it up or throw the bed out the window.
I never experienced that. I have heard of it, but I never experienced it. But then again, we were Royal Artillery. We were not high-grade infantry regiments who go in more for bullshit than the artillery did. And I think that's probably true, and probably still true today.
Now, so you're doing a lot of this. The other thing you mentioned was drill.
Drill.
You've never done any drill.
Oh, God, no. Well, I had. I had been in the cadets. I knew roughly.
Yeah, we should have mentioned that.
We should have done, shouldn't we?
We'll just drop that in now. Because
right.
So when had you been in the cadets?
I was in the cadets, Army cadets, in Islington when I was probably about 14 for about a year. Yeah, that was quite a... you said, did I have hobbies? Yeah, that was... one, which I quite enjoyed.
What year would that be?
So we got to look again around about 1951, possibly into 52, 14 years onwards.
Now, where were the army cadets based?
It was based in Islington, down off of Essex Road in Upper Street. It was Cross Street is where it was. It's no longer there because the house is probably worth £1 million now, and it wasn't then.
What made you join? You don't have to be in the army.
I rather fancied the idea. I think I have missed a bit out here because I also volunteered for the Navy at one time. Or when I was 14, went to inquire about joining the Navy. I've always fancied travel. And I think my sarcasm put him off. And they weren't particularly interested in me, so I never went back. And I don't think my parents agreed to it.
So it was
my decision to join the army cadets. It was good. We used to shoot guns and had a uniform, but it wasn't to the same standard obviously as later on in the army. So yes, I did have I'd fired a rifle by then. I'd been to camp a couple of times, so I did more or less know the drill.
So what What sort of drill have you done with them?
Well, it's very second rate compared with the army one, you know. It was more Dad's army. Please stand to attention, you know. It was a bit different.
And what weapons training?
303 rifle. Same as what I was issued with when I joined the army.
And how far did you get with it?
Well, no, we used to shoot live ammunition at a range up near Barnet. I think it was up near Barnet. Obviously, it was on the range and it was extremely controlled, but then it was always controlled right through my army service career.
And were you a natural?
No. Bad shot. Definitely a bad shot.
But you went through it. Was it a full bore or 22?
No, a 303 rifle, the full thing, yeah.
And any other weapons, or was that it, rifle?
In the cadets, that was it. Yeah. No, there was a Bren gun. I fired a Bren gun, which still fires 303 bullets, same calibre bullet, but a little bit faster. The only one we weren't allowed to use, which is in common use then, was the Sten gun, not in the cadets. I think it's pushing their luck.
But what do you think of the Bren gun?
Bren gun, I always thought was a very superior weapon. Maybe we were told it was, I don't know. Still weren't very accurate with it. But I think the reason they let you do that in the cadets at that time, and I'm sure they wouldn't now, is the fact that you only fired the Bren gun laying down. It would be very difficult to sort of hurt anybody with it.
So the other thing with that, what about these annual camps or weekends away?
Weekends away was we could stick daffodils in their head and run through bushes and, you know, that type of thing, and that was great fun. But before, it's terrible the way your mind goes. Before that, I did join the Boy Scouts.
I'll come back to that as well. The weekend training, which is tactical training.
Tactical training. Obviously, they're going to make it interesting and fascinating for boys. We are going to take that pillbox, which was probably not a pillbox, that type of thing. But it was on army camps. It was an army camp, so we would raid the pillbox and scream and shout. But they wouldn't allow us any bayonets. We had to pretend we had a bayonet.
And what about annual camp or the summer camp?
I think I only probably did one.
What was that?
That was even the same thing, but more extended. We'd build a bridge across a stream, you know, which was easy enough to jump over, but they'd still get logs and we'd do this. It was playing soldiers.
And why did you stop? Because you do stop before you need to. I mean,
I often run out of steam with all sorts of things. I would have liked to have stopped the army before I did, but they didn't agree.
So that was that. Now, what about Boy Scouts experience?
This is going to be very brief. I joined the Boy Scouts in White Lion Street, again in Islington, near where I lived. I attended that evening. Didn't have a uniform, of course. I just attended.
What year was this?
Then I would have been about 12.
So that's 1928.
Now, the experience in the Boy Scouts was I did the evening, and I'm just I dib or tie knots or whatever they were doing. I can't remember. The thing that I do definitely remember is that on the way out of the hall afterwards, the scout leader came up and said, I wouldn't bother coming back anymore if I were you. So I must have been a nuisance again. So my scouting career started and ended within 2 hours. So no experience of camp there.
So what about drill with the army then? You've done it with the army cadets.
Right, I've done it with the army.
4 years before, 3 years before.
Yeah, it had been. I mean, it was a bit rusty, but I knew my left from my right. My posture doesn't allow me to march smartly. It never did. So I was never a smart marcher. I knew what to do, but I think it's something to do with my posture. It just looked absurd.
They call it tick-tocking or pigeon, you know, where you move your left arm, your left.
I didn't have a problem with that, no. There weren't technical problems, it was a posture. I think, you know, just some were like ramrods and I never was. You shout out, Selleck, you know, stick your arse in. It was that sort of thing all the time. I was picked on. And I would mutter under gunner. Not supposed
to. Did you understand the point of drill at the time?
Yes, I probably did. You had lectures as well. You move as one, and that makes sense, and still makes sense. But some were better than others. I was always hidden in the middle rank.
You didn't object to drill. You saw you had to do it.
I saw I had to do it in the early stages. I have two different attitudes to the army. The one at Oswald Street was okay. After that, it changed.
Okay. Anything else you were doing at Oswald Street? These lectures, what were the lectures on? Were they just on Royal Artillery?
Artillery history, regimental history, I think it was called. It was a period. PE, I found out what PT as it was.
I'll come back to yeah. This. Anything else? I mean, what were the
lecture on?
So, Royal Artillery history.
Anything else? I can't. Yeah, identification would have been one to know who was an officer and who was not, and what, you know, whether you saluted him or presented arms. There was things like that. Not that we'd had any arms at that stage, anyway. Barely had any arms to do that, but I already knew that, how to present arms. No, that was mainly regimental history. Most of the time would have been used was getting you fit, if I can remember rightly.
What fitness level were you? Because you were a bit of a wild
man. Wasn't bad, but I found it very hard and was not an athlete. So you were with other lads who were real athletes who went running weekends and so on, you know, had already joined up and probably already done it. I had not. I found it quite difficult. I always found it difficult to run. I'm not a good runner. I was going to say today, I wouldn't be today. But I always found running a problem. I always found marching not a problem, and I still walk huge distances now.
So how far would they make you run?
Most of it was indoors. The ones I can remember, touch the wall behind me, in front of me, touch it again, again, again. And I found with the crowd, I could stay in the middle and not do too much.
Any other PT?
Yeah, the other thing would have been the occasional route march. As I say, you've got to remember that the artillery didn't really go in too much for fitness.
So what about, did they have assault courses, anything like that, there at Oswestry?
I don't remember an assault course at Oswestry. There may have been, I can certainly remember it later on. But.
How were you getting on with the lads, these the other raw recruits?
I didn't have a problem there either. So,
same sort of background.
I already had one mate by that time, as I say, Roy Jemmett, who I met going up. So we would go out together and from Oswestry Street. Well, very rarely, actually. In the first 2 weeks, he was hardly allowed out of camp anyway.
So, did you make any other friends?
Not at Oswestry Street.
But any bullying amongst the group?
Not again at Oswestry Street. I think they're all a bit sort of shell-shocked for the first 2 weeks. It settles down and then people take sides after that.
What about the instructor, the NCO? What do you think of them?
What, in...
At Oswestry.
In Anglo-Saxon, or...?
However you like. This is the Oswestry Street one. Don't you say what you like, though?
No, I mean, in all the training, they're obviously selected for their meanness and... No, I didn't appreciate them at all.
What was wrong with them?
Their main weapon was to humiliate you as much as possible. I do not and still don't like being humiliated, as opposed to anything else. There was no, I didn't see any sort of brutality, no hitting, and I know this goes on in certain regiments. That didn't happen in the artillery, but they're just obviously selected for their meanness. I think you can put it any stronger than that.
Officers
at Oswestry Street hardly made an appearance. I can't remember any officers there, but I'm sure they were there. But they took a back seat. They weren't part of their...
Now, anything else happened at Oswestry Street? I know you were only there a couple of weeks. It's in March, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Into March, into April, probably.
Yeah.
Anything else happened there?
We had our injections, I can remember, at Oswestry Street.
Now, what effect did they have? Because it seems a bit mixed to how people react.
Well, I'm not very medical, but I remember the one TAB where it froze the arm, and that was the one you had time off for. But the jabs we had, I can't even remember how many there was. It would have already been vaccinated, as all people were in the 50s anyway, so that didn't count. There was TAB, as I say, was one that was the painful one, and you was given a morning off. And then some of the NCOs, or I think it was the NCOs, had a scheme where they'd come round and you would have your photograph taken in full uniform and proudly standing there. And I had one taken, which I still have somewhere, and sent it home to my mother, and my mother said, he doesn't look well. Mothers can tell. And I wasn't very well. Though I'm smiling in the picture, she knew I wasn't well. And that was taken the day I had the TB injection. TAB injection. Not TB. But what they were for, I'm not certain. There was quite a few of them. And you just queue up and have the needle jammed in, and that's it.
Anything else that while you were at Oswestry
Not that I can. It was full of polishing and marching, and really that was about it. It was intensive. You wouldn't finish till 10 o'clock at night. This would go on from dawn onwards virtually.
So you then go to the training regiment.
I can't remember the training regiment of Rill. No. It was there. Before that, obviously, I was selected to do to be a radio operator. That was going to be my job.
How were you selected for that?
I was appointed to it. I no more than that. They must have had a shortage of radio operators, and they put me down for it. I find that slightly strange with my lack of qualifications at school, but that's what they did. And I could cope with that, you know. So I was sent to Rill to be trained, to finish my basic training, but mainly to be trained as a radio operator.
Now, what happened when you got to... Were all of you going to this training regiment?
No.
We'll look up the number. We can, because it stayed that in most of the mid-50s, it was the same number, so we'll look them up. Where were they going to?
People were going to all sorts of places. We lived in hopes that you would be posted near to home. In my case, being in London, it could have been the headquarters at Woolwich, it could have been anywhere, so I didn't really particularly ask to be a signaller. The others were going for gun training. I think that was Barnard's Castle up north, I'm not sure. I was going to have nothing to do with guns until I'd finished my training, just radio.
So what happened when you got to Rill?
At Rill, we were again living in the same conditions. Same kind of hut, spiders, a few miles outside the town of Rill, because we had to take a bus in there.
Now, what was a typical day's training? We'll look at things that way. What time
they had, like, the old sort of school thing, parade, 8:30, I think, might have been earlier. Inspections carried on.
So
every day.
What time would you have to get up to get out and parade?
I think Reveille was 6 o'clock, but not being an infantry regiment, there were no trumpets or anything. There was just an NCO coming round, banging on your bed with a stick or something. There's nothing official in there. And
so you get up.
You get up. You dress in best BD boots and gaiters. You would have the NCO would have a quick inspection. That you'd made your beds, laid your kit out, and then off to breakfast, which was a highlight with a mug behind your back. Yeah. Back after.
What was the food like generally?
Again, I didn't have a problem with the food. The food was okay. It was cornflakes. There was hundreds and hundreds of tins they must have bought of tin tomatoes. They were very, very fond of those. Beans. Can't remember being particularly disappointed in the food.
We'll go through the whole day. What about lunch or dinner, whatever you call it?
Lunch was, first of all, the naffy break. Then you'd buy something sticky like a donut or something, you know, on the naffy break at 11 o'clock. And then for lunch, it would be meat and veg. It was, again, no problem. I can't remember having a problem with food in the army.
Tea?
Tons of tea. I didn't really drink their tea because we were told, whether it's true or a myth, that they put something in the tea. All I do know is our tea was a sort of purple colour and didn't taste right.
Would you have an evening meal?
An evening meal and even supper. You could go and less formal because we used to have to, while I was in training, we had to march there and back.
Now, how did the food compare with, say, what you were used to at home?
Far superior. My mother couldn't cook, you see, so this, it was far superior.
So you were happy with the food?
I was happy with the food. I can't remember having a problem with the food.